Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. We got Michael Cox back with us, ladies and gentlemen. Mike is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, going back all the way to the year 2000 when he first joined us. He's been a great Brain Trust member since then. He was former chief economist at the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. He's now the director of the O'Neill School, the O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom over at Southern Methodist University in the great state of Texas. He's the author of the Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, Myths of Rich and Poor. He's our good friend, Mike Cox. Welcome back.
Hey, Jim. Thanks. Good to be here.
It's good to have you back, as always. And folks, if you haven't figured out, we find good people. We don't let them get away just because they change jobs. We hang on to them. Mike, as you've learned now, we're like the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Well, I'm not trying to leave. I didn't want to check out. You know?
There you go. Hey, Michael, let's take a few minutes and get you to give us a little tour of the economy. What do you think about how things are going with the economy?
Okay, well, you know, I think the best way to look at the economy is to compare it to the past 25 years. And that was truly an exceptional period from 1982 to 2007. In that 25-year period, we only had 16 months of recession, which is historically unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because we were riding what economists would call a Kondratiev wave, a wave that comes around over 100 years.
Kondratiev?
Kondratiev. Nikolai Kondratiev, Russian economist. He noticed these waves, and they're associated with big things like electricity. Well, this one was associated with the microchip.
Mm-hmm.
So the last 25 years, we had a tech boom. You know, we just have all these computers in the economy now. We have the Internet. We have all these smart products, all the software. We have biotech. We have things in Human Genome Project and so on. It was a tech boom. It was also a globalization boom. China came out from underneath feudalism in 1978 and started to trade in the world economy. There are 3 billion new capitalists, and so there's a lot more exports and imports and global trade. That was a big deal, you know. Policy was pretty good, relatively speaking, compared to where I think it's going to go. Reaganomics we got the tax rate down from 70% to 35%, so it was a good period policy-wise, and also the demographics were right.
Mm-hmm.
The baby boom generation was entering the labor force, being productive and engaging in risk-taking in the stock market and buying equity and investing in companies. Now they're a little bit older, a lot older.
what's going to be, and by the way, folks, Kondratiev, K-O-N-D-R-A-R-A-T-I-E-V, Kondratiev, kind of a Soviet name there. I mean, a Russian name that sounds like. But anyway, what are the elements? What are the factors that could create the next Kondratiev wave?
Oh, that's, like I said, they only come around alone. Now, okay, well, look, there is one. We're very lucky. There is one that is going to happen, and it's going to be a massive wave, and it will happen, you know, probably within the next 20 years, but which is very close.
I want it now, Mike. I want it now.
I know you want it now. Well, the only thing you're going to get now is continued technology spillovers from the microchip.
Yeah.
The next wave is going to be associated with the true application of the Human Genome Project,
mm-hmm.
genomics. And there may be a nanotech wave if we can really get that solved, but that's a harder problem than we realize, being able to assemble molecules at the material at the atomic level.
But while we're waiting on the next Kondratiev wave, What are we gonna be looking at in the next 12 to 24 months?
Okay. Well, first of all, you've got the cyclical upturn, right? We know the economy has been down, and so people have postponed purchasing durables like cars and refrigerators,
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff. Of course, they're buying cars now with cash for clunkers and so on. But a lot of their furniture, a lot of their appliances and so
mm-hmm.
on, durable. There are a number of durable goods, and then all the associated things that go into them, motors and so on. You're going to see an upturn in those industries
because of a pent up demand.
Right. I mean, you can only let your stuff depreciate so long before it's just plain broken, and you got to go out and buy one. And you get the slightest little upturn in income, and people feel confident enough to go out there and replace their refrigerator or
mm-hmm.
something. So that's going to happen. But even people's clothing is kind of getting worn out at the consignment stores. have been very busy, and that's second generation at least
right.
clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that gets worn out, and then you got to go back to get first generation clothing again. So that'll come back.
Do you think? Do you think the economy is going to? How long do you think it's going to take for us to get to a recovery mode?
Some kind of recovery mode is going to take probably another 12 months.
Yeah.
We're going to be bouncing along bottom, I think, for a while, up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
We may have a double dip. It's going to depend on Obama's policies because, you know, he's so far, I don't see really a lot of good policies coming out of there, a lot of really stimulative economic policies. Heavy government spending with all the burden of debt and so on is not, it's really not as stimulative as they think it is. It's because people realize they're going to have to pay that back. They can't really spend the money.
So it's going to be another 12 months, maybe longer. And according to Michael Cox, and he and I will be right back. We come back, we're going to talk about some guidelines for investing in this kind of an economy. And I got another question about that Kondratiev way for Mike after these messages. See, we learned something today, didn't we? Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Hope you'll check out my website when you get a chance, smallbusinessadvocate.com. Lots of stuff there that will help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. It looks different because it is different, so check it out. We got some new stuff there, new way of presenting what we have, and I hope you'll check it out, and I hope you like it. Let us know what you think. You want to listen, you can read, you can ask questions, you can check out my blog, you can subscribe to my newsletter, lots of stuff there on every topic under the Small Business Sun. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Michael Cox is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. W. Michael Cox is the name on Myths of Rich and Poor, which he and Richard Alm wrote, a Pulitzer Prize-nominated book. Mike is director of the O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom over at Southern Methodist University outside of Dallas, Texas. And Mike, one of the things you just told us about Kondratiev wave, which evokes this a new word we've learned. I want you to look that up. Very interesting. So you said that the last Kondratiev wave we had was because there was kind of like this perfect alignment of lower taxes, of the fall of the Russian, of the Soviet Empire, the microchip, et cetera. Those things came together to create all these this environment for growth. And you said the next one is going to be the next thing that's going to cause another Kondratiev wave is going to be the human genome. But I've got something else I want to ask you about. Two things, actually. One is nanotechnology, which I guess is kind of part of the human genome thing. And the other one that I think will help cause this Kondratiev wave, and I think that's happening right now. And the second one is alternative energy. Why can't those three things create the next? Why wouldn't they create the next Kondratiev wave?
Well, they can, but these waves tend to be associated with a major invention. And so, in order to really get to alternative energy, we're going to have some major energy, which makes it affordable.
I think America has the ability to create that, and we're just not doing it.
Well, you know, it will take a huge investment, and if there's something there, we'll find it.
Yeah.
That's the issue. For example, if there's really a better technology for solar cells, and we find that, and it's 10 times as efficient, then we're going to switch.
Or battery technology, or hydrogen, or something.
But still, even then, you got to generate some electricity to charge those batteries.
So you're not
really
changing. Hydrogen, though.
Hydrogen is so expensive. I wouldn't look for hydrogen.
Okay.
Biofuels.
Biofuels is not the answer either.
No, and it's not. You're right. It's not biofuels. It would have to be solar. Wind is pretty limited.
It's got to be something that the masses can use.
What the nanotechnology people said is interesting. You brought those two things up because the nano people say that really, the only way you can ever have a tremendously efficient solar cell of it is through nanotechnology.
Right.
And okay, so nanotechnology, what that is for folks who don't know, it's molecular engineering. It's material engineering at the molecular level, building materials that are stronger than steel and lighter than plastic, but have the properties you want, being slippery, heat resistant, strong
and smart,
stretchy,
and smart.
They've got the
ability to store and process information.
Now, the nanotechnology was begun when IBM was trying to develop a something which would, you could see the microchip as it got smaller and smaller and smaller. We got beyond the Apple, the capabilities of optics, and we had to go down to the scanning tunneling microscope, or the electronic force.
Moore's law came into play.
Yeah.
So
we had to see things in a different way.
So, Michael, talk to us about you. I know you've been thinking a lot about lately about how do we have an investment strategy in these things?
Right. Well, the first thing I think people need to do is prepare for inflation. In these times, over these next 10 years, you need to prepare for some inflation.
Now, folks, Mike's an economist. He knows about these things.
Go ahead. I'm a former Fed economist, and the Fed has increased the balance sheet, base money, but multiple of 2.5 of its level back a year and a half ago. So we've had a huge run-up in base money. Now, I personally believe, and in fact, I know, that the Fed has the ability to control that inflation. They have the ability to take that money back out of the economy as they need to keep inflation from going up.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to get it exactly right, and that's kind of hard.
Because if they don't get it right, they'll hurt the growth. They hurt the recovery.
Right. Well, they didn't get it right lately. Lately, they would, if they had had their way, they would not have let deflation happen, but it did happen. About 3 to 4% percentage points of deflation over a time period when that's the last thing we needed. So they didn't hit the mark, and I don't think they could hit the mark perfectly on inflation coming back
so
up. One more thing, Jim. Plus, I think that the Fed actually is going to want a little bit more than the normal rate of inflation to come underneath.
We could all use a little inflation right now, couldn't we?
Well, not everybody, but
a little bit.
Think, you know, so I'm looking for about 4% inflation, which is higher than the 2% that
high.
We were having.
Yeah. We haven't had 4% in a long time. So does that mean we should buy gold?
Well, it means, yes, right. The traditional things apply except for real estate. Normally, when you're going to have inflation, you buy commodities,
right?
You buy real property.
Mm-hmm.
You get out of bonds, and you look for stocks which are inflation resilient, ones that are not produced in competitive markets, ones that have a good that's
right.
got some market power, either a patent or some kind of differentiated product, so that when prices rise, they can pass the prices on to consumers. So, but in this case, what would you do? You certainly don't want to be in long-term bonds, right? I mean, that'd just kill you, because the interest rates will rise along with the inflation rates, and then you get really burned with capital losses. And normally, I would say buy real estate, and if you can find a good deal, that's still a good thing to do.
Right.
But there's still a lot of shakeout to go through in real estate, particularly commercial real estate. Probably house prices in many areas are low enough to where the inflation would make that a good bet. Investing in real property,
right?
Residential property, and what else do you do? Like you said, you buy some commodities, which tend to go up faster
than inflation. What about land?
Good idea. Especially if we open the gates back up.
Jim Rogers says farmland is a good deal. He told us that last week. He says farmland is going to be a great investment. Quick break. Stay with us. We're going to be right back with Michael Cox. We're going to get him to tell us some more about where we should be putting our money in the future. Little Marvin Gaye bringing us back. 7 till, I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for hanging out with me. Michael Cox is our guest. Mike is the director of O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom at the Cox School of Business at Southern Methodist University. It doesn't get any better than that. That's God's country down there, isn't it, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Tell
everybody
us about
thinks, you know, everybody, I said that one time. People said, well, everywhere is God's country, which is true.
Tell us about your group.
Well, what we do is we try to teach these kids how to do business in a globalized world. So many of them, and companies too, so many of them haven't yet caught on to the fact that the world is in tremendous transition, the second great period of globalization, this one being associated with the selling of services to the rest of the world. And you can do things now you used to not be able to do.
Yep.
You can even, you know, do trans-global tutoring. You can manage a labor force in India. Everything you need to get done, you can typically get done by a cheaper labor force abroad. Now, that sounds like heresy to some of the
labor force
around here, but the truth is it's the way we prosper over time. We move on up to doing higher things upon the hierarchy of human
It's no different system. From what was being done 4,000 years ago. It's
no
just,
different.
Just a different commodity.
And labor. We're winning this race. We're selling a lot more of our services abroad to the rest of
yes.
the world than we're importing from them.
But you wouldn't know it to hear some people talk about it.
You know, I mean, there are 22 categories of services trade that the BEA has. We have deficits in only 5.
Yeah.
And they're very small deficits. And they're tiny compared to the huge surpluses we have in selling our financial services to the world and many other things, our education services, our legal services, our medical services.
Mike, give us the website.
Okay, it's O'NeillCenter.com.
O'NeillCenter.com, folks, right there at SMU, so check it out. Mike?
Now, let me say one more thing. We have a conference. I want to tell people about it. On October the 16th at SMU here, on Friday, October 16th, which is what do businesses need to succeed in today's global competitive economy? That's what it's about.
I'm not one of the speakers at that, am I, Mike?
No.
Why?
Well, you should be. And we'll have another conference next year.
I'm just having some fun with you, Mike. Hey Michael, and that's can they find out that more about that at the website?
Yes, at the O'NeillCenter.com
or .edu?
No, .com.
O'NeillCenter.com. Yes. Check it out, folks. For that, and that's on the 16th of October. Michael, you're a small business, and you know, small businesses listening to you right now, and they believe what you're saying, and they're talking. They're hanging on every word. What would you tell them to do with their business strategies?
Number one thing: reach out for global customers. Don't tell me you can't do that just because you're a small business. There are many, many successful small businesses which are doing so. I mean, we've got companies of 10 people, where there are 10 people in the United States who are associated with 100 people in India. So reach out to global customers. 21 out of every 22 of our customers in the United States lies outside our borders.
95% of all prospects on planet Earth are not in the United States.
That's exactly right. And it's that's true for insurance sales. It's true for transglobal tutoring. Log on to Tutor Vista, T-U-T-O-R, Vista, V-I-S-T-A .com, and look at this company, which is run by Americans, but they're using Indian master's level and PhD people to tutor American students in their homes for $100 a month.
Mm-hmm.
There are American companies using Indian labor to collect debt. And the list, I could go on with a long list of examples where that are small businesses laden. They're just totally small businesses.
One of the things that I've been encouraging, you do have a lot of neighborhood businesses here in the United States, Mike, that aren't going to go global, but I'm trying to remind them that they are very closely connected to the global economy, much more than they ever thought before, and they need to think about that too.
I don't want to challenge a person to tell me, what's your product, and then tell me why you can't go global, and let me think about it, and I'll bet you I could come up with a way you can go global.
The thing is you can come up with a way that, if not, as I said, in this day and time, you're a lot more directly connected than you were 20 years ago.
Absolutely. The other day, I wanted to take a trip down to McDonald Observatory and see the stars. I spent 3 hours trying to put together my trip. I took that same requirement and passed it over to two places in India, and they brought me back exactly the same information I was able to find, except many times a lot better.
Yeah.
I could have outsourced that function, that three-hour work, over to some place. In fact, that's why I'm starting a business now where everybody can have a secretary. Even soccer moms can have a secretary who take care of their daily chores for them. Much of what we do doesn't require that we have proximity.
It's a different way of thinking of time, isn't it?
It absolutely, and it's a different way.
And
of thinking
we're valuing
about space.
That's the essence of what you're saying is something I've talked about for a long time. More folks, there's opportunity in the fact that more and more people are valuing their time more than their money.
That's true. That's a good point.
And that's what you were just talking about. Give us that website one more time.
O'NeillCenter.com.
So check it out.
Oh, you mean Tutor Vista?
No, O'NeillCenter.com. That's what I wanted.
That's our O'Neill Center. Yeah.
Hey, Michael, will you come back again real soon?
You asked me, and I'm back, Jim.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks. Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen. He's the best. He'll be back, I promise. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.